Friends, it's wonderful to be with you, even if it is only virtually. And I am counting down the days until I am there with you in person, just over a month now. We are all, each one of us, cobbling together our lives, constructing kaleidoscopes of meaning from found bits and pieces, the shiny baubles that we find as we move through our days. Human beings cannot do without meaning and a sense of purpose. We need to know which end is up. Otherwise, we just float through our lives directionless, moving from one day to the next with no way to put the pieces together meaningfully. If we are lucky, there is plenty of meaning in our lives. We are given people to love, meaningful work, causes to fight for, as well as beauty, delight, and joy. But many are not so lucky. We increasingly live in a world that feels disorienting, lonely, and even haunted by a sense of doom. Now, if you think that doom talk is an exaggeration, just spend time around thoughtful young people. Live your lives with them, as I am doing now with my daughter. Over the course of any given week, you can feel poignantly that they are trying to build meaningful lives, even as they read the latest bleak climate reports from the UN. They have to learn to do all the things that we once had to do as young adults. Figure out how to pay our bills, buy our first furniture, go to school, start building careers, purchase life insurance. You know, the stressful stuff of ordinary life. They now have a verb for all this, adulting. Adulting is their word for learning how to assume the roles and responsibilities that come with adult life. But their lives, unlike ours at their age, is tinged with melancholy as they watch earlier generations leave them with a world locked into ecological peril. They now recognize that the 1.5 degrees Celsius threshold that global climate treaties had adopted now appears all but unreachable. We seem at present to be heading toward a global temperature rise of 2 degrees Celsius or more. At those temperatures, we are in for massive coral reef die-off, horrific storms, flooded coastal cities, and a rapid rise in global conflict due to competition over scarce resources like water. Could you do it? Could you begin to build your adult lives while confronting these painful truths? Global forecasts for the decades to come sound a lot like our gospel reading for today. When you hear of wars and insurrections, do not be terrified, for these things must take place, but the end will not follow immediately. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes and in various places, famines and plagues. That sounds grim, but also uncannily like the front pages of our newspapers. Standard daily fare for us these days, as we read of war in Ukraine, the threat of famine in Somalia, and devastating storms in Florida. Is there a word of consolation and hope that we can offer ourselves and those who will have to clean up the mess we made? How do we fortify those who desperately need to find the courage to keep on keeping on? I don't know about you, but the young people I know can spot false consolation from a mile away. Young people, teenagers on up, have very acute BS detectors. Offer a consoling lie and they will spot it in an instant. What about Jesus? Does he offer us a model for truth-telling? Well, yes. He certainly pulls no punches in today's reading. Scholars tell us that all the Gospels were written after AD 70, when Rome had devastated the temple and razed Jerusalem to the ground. I believe that Jesus saw that coming, even without miraculous powers. He could read the mood of his people and knew that Jerusalem was a powder keg waiting to go off. He preached a gospel of nonviolent resistance and enemy love in order to find other ways of fighting Roman occupation without violence, which he knew would be a suicidal venture. And under these conditions, how did Jesus respond? Did he tell his listeners a wishful story? Did he offer an easy word amidst all the gloom and doom? Honestly, I hear no consoling word, but I do find an encouraging word. Let us listen again. You will be betrayed, even by parents and brothers, by relatives and friends, and they will put some of you to death. You will be hated by all because of my name. But not a hair of your head will perish. By your endurance, you will gain your souls. Now, no doubt, if you're listening carefully, you will have picked up on a pretty stark apparent contradiction. How can Jesus simultaneously say, they will put some of you to death, and also say, not a hair of your head will perish? I'm pretty sure that when you are put to death, your hair and pretty much everything else about you perishes. Is Jesus promising us an afterlife as consolation for our sufferings in this life? You may have to battle here, as veterans and others did in the calamitous wars of the last century, but worry not, there will be life in the hereafter. Perhaps that is certainly a fair way to read Jesus. But what about this world? The promise that my life is not over when I meet death might console me, but what about the world I so love and those who live on after me? What if I'm not interested so much in my own survival as I am in the flourishing of those whom I love and the world at large? These questions matter to me, and I suspect they matter to you, and easy answers won't do. I'd rather live with the questions than accept a theological placebo. And so far as I can tell, Jesus offers no placebos. Not in this passage or anywhere else for that matter. He tells the painful truth without sugarcoating. He tells his disciples that they are in for a rough time. He does not lie. He is not like the run-of-the-mill prosperity preachers who speak in his name. Instead, Jesus says, if you follow me and seek to live as my disciples, you're going to make trouble for yourselves. They will arrest you and persecute you. They will hand you over to synagogues and prisons, and you will be brought before kings and governors because of my name. This will give you an opportunity to testify. So make up your minds not to prepare your defense in advance, for I will give you words and a wisdom that none of your opponents will be able to withstand or contradict. Now, that doesn't sound like much of a sales pitch, does it? Peter, what will you get if you follow me? Well, Peter, if you follow me, you can be sure to be arrested and persecuted and thrown in prison. But wait, there's more. Getting arrested and being brought before kings and judges will give you an opportunity to testify. Thanks, I guess, Lord. Is that the bonus prize? Opportunity is not the word I'd use. What about something a bit more tangible, Lord? Like, I don't know, maybe fame, power, security, and maybe a $2 billion Powerball prize, as we do it here in the US. Jesus promises to give his disciples only this: I will give you words and a wisdom that none of your opponents will be able to withstand or contradict. What Jesus promises is this: when we stand before worldly powers, when we are persecuted and tested, we will be given words and a wisdom. In times of testing and trial, Jesus promises us that we will be empowered to speak in his name. We will be empowered to testify against the rulers of this age, those who seek to wield power in their own self-interest at the expense of others. We will be enabled to confront those who keep investing resources to perpetuate the fossil fuel status quo, those who keep propping up a failed and planet-ravaging economic system rather than work to save the planet from ecological devastation and doom. We will be given insight, prophetic clarity, and the courage to speak the truth. We will know what to say. Will we win? Will we carry the day? Does Jesus promise us victory? He does no such thing. Against the powers of empire, against the powers of the age, he promises to give us nothing more than words and wisdom, but without guarantees. We might rightly respond, but Lord, words are such fragile instruments. Are you really calling us to enter the lion's den, armed only with words and wisdom? And I imagine Jesus responding, when I walked the earth, did you see me wield armies or wealth or coercive political power? Did I have at my disposal anything other than words and wisdom? That is all you shall have too, nothing more. My way is the way of persuasion, not coercion. That is all that love can and will do. Love's means are always necessarily fragile and delicate. Love must do its insistent work lovingly. The means and the ends must be the same. I will grant to you love's only weapons, words and wisdom. In the tragic world of human history, we remember with respect and affection those who felt compelled to use other means, including force. On Remembrance Sunday, we are mindful that we have been in tragic situations in which violence seemed to us the only option. And we encourage the soldier, and we honor the soldier's courage, remembering that the recourse to violence is never the soldier's fault, but the fault of those who send them out into battle. We remember so that we do not repeat. But in the end, we recall the words of our Lord, that we are called to battle for righteousness with love's only weapons, words and wisdom. When we do battle with those weapons, Jesus offers us only one guarantee. You will be hated by all because of my name, but not a hair of your head will perish. By your endurance, you will gain your souls. When you live in the service of love, you may not win, but you will gain your souls. You will not lose yourself. You will not wither away and lose the meaning of your lives. You will not fall into a moral abyss. You will be who you were created to be, namely servants of love. You will not be tempted to serve just causes by unjust means. You may not win every battle you fight. You may even be put to death, but you will have gained the price, the pearl beyond price, your very soul. You will have lived lives of purpose, meaning, and love. Whether you win or lose is not the essential question. The only question is this: did you live out your calling? Did you serve the cause of love? That is what it means to be disciples of the crucified Lord. This is how the incarnate one lived his life, and that is how we too are called to live. One final thought. Why does Jesus encourage us not to prepare words in advance when we are called to testify? To this professor, this feels like an invitation to under-preparation. I mean, don't prepare your lecture. Just go with it. Jesus' answer, I believe, is this: we will have words and wisdom to speak because we will not be alone. We are never alone. The Spirit, who is the source of holy words and wisdom, is with us now and will be with us always. This is the source of our courage and our hope. Amen.